address it all, and he sent baskets, hundreds of baskets to people.
Who did he give them to?
Poor.
Anybody?
If anybody got a notice from anybody that sent a letter from somebody who needed anybody, people would send him tons of letters. He never comes to the church. That's what he should kill my ass. He never comes and gets
it. He just wanted help from
his wanted help.
They knew he helped you.
Knew he helped. Knew he would never send anybody away. Knew he would never send. I have never in 20 years, I have never seen him turn away any living thing that came to the store. I've seen him pick up. I seen a moth fall at his feet one time in a meeting. We were all still talking. Moth, I saw a moth up there. I didn't bother me. It was a dead moth, you know. Picked it up and stroked his wings. And the moth came back to life. And it flows around his face as if to say that, look, you know, I want you to see me. It's kind of like a, he's kind of peaceful, but he held it in his hand. He held it right in the palm of his hand. And it's just, but it's crazy. Damn thing flew around the room. But, during this time, we used to go out at Christmas, and we'd walk through the snow, and we'd take these baskets. And some people would fall out at the beginning of the year. Some of these church people would fall out. They'd say, well, we're going to work with you, and we're going to help you. But they got awfully tired of eating around, and the snows back there were deep. And I was in the car when I was at group, but we still had like 10 baskets left. And I said, well, what are we going to do if we get to these baskets? And they said, well, we'll just put them after him. But he didn't seem quite right, so I didn't understand principle of much about nothing. That I needed. But when it was left over, they were saying, I'll find someone else who needs it. They just sent it back to him. So he and Martha got back up, went back out and lived in that life. I would never see this guy. Good for people. You know, myself, I always thought he let people use him.
And I don't know why people do it. He told you that
he was choosing to be like. After thinking about Mary, he said, if I said one person, out of 10,000, and the one that told me, yes, what I did was evil. And I thought, God, what a philosophy. What an outlook on life. And he was the first person who ever told me in the concept that I understood God back in the day. He said, I didn't really understand it. And he said, the highest kind of worship that we could do would be the service to other people. That's the highest thing you can do, not for anybody. And if they don't respect it, if they don't appreciate it, then it's still on our loss. That's what he said to me, and he said, I said, if I tell you all about myself, you'll hate me, you won't like me anymore. He said, if you tell me all about yourself and I don't like you, it won't be your problem. And he always had the philosophy of understanding that. And I've always felt there wasn't anything I could accept him that he didn't accept me. He might tell me what I should have done it different or how I could have done it different. But he always accepted me, and that's what it's like. But, relatively new to the group. And it happened to me where I was coming from. I was very neurotic. My mother had died. I had a terrible thing about my mother. She was a god to me, and I worshipped her. I was lost in a lot of my own guilt, headed for a mental hospital. I was cracking up. I had gotten to where I wouldn't touch anything with my hands. I would open things with my elbow, open my door, and you know, I wouldn't have my child work my children's hands, but they were raw. And I was in such heavy guilt, and I loved him, I met him, and we talked, and then he went overseas, and we wrote letters back and forth, and he began to talk about, you know, if you could live in peace, different peaceful things came up, and there was a group one time, it was coming in March, in Columbus, for the, about, it was a protest march, and for peace, to stop bombings and to stop bombings. I'm trying to think where it would have been at that time. That was all I knew when I met Jim was that immigration was right. I didn't understand how it could come about. I knew it was wrong to hate people based on the fact of their color or their last name. And I didn't know. I was so fast in my own. Yes, but trying to do things that I thought I was always running around trying to. I always created a lot of confusion because then I was doing myself. Because I knew those things were right. And he tried to mellow me, you know, and I said, not mellow.
Yeah, I can hear it.
Well, first of all,
this is a great, great, great,
great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great, great when this peace thing came about, we underground this peace.
Okay, when a traffic comes in or you are out, you stop them, right? You stop them and tell them to call in here, okay?
The doctors and lecturers who left you in the
house. That's all you want to talk to.
And they're just going to march for peace. You got to beat that. So, I didn't know what the hell fame meant. I didn't know anything about Mammy Cousins or a book or not. Then I couldn't even read it. I could not understand it. But I knew that I had so much faith in him after seeing his life that if he said it was right, I knew it was right. I knew it was right. There's no question in my mind. Since the brother went to Mark's with you, certainly he sounds beautiful. We should do that. So I got Patricia about it, and we went down to one of the veterans there. And when we got down there, I got in this group, and I was extremely naive. There were people who were there with beautiful big cars, and I remember the cigarette holders, and they couldn't speak English. And I wanted to be very friendly with them. I told them, I said, Gordon, call you for children. Nobody could speak English. And I remember the cigarette holders and a white Cadillac. And they were Spanish, and they had signs. In Spanish, I couldn't read them. So I kept saying, I want to march for peace. I went up to people. They handed me a sign and said, "Nuts." N-U-T-S, and I thought, "Come on, I'm going to march for peace, man." And the other thought is I said, "Voo-voo, the moose. Voo-voo." So I truly had a man who had camera phone, all over him. And I said, "Can anybody speak English?" And he said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "Well, I'm supposed to have to learn, but I'm trying to do peace march." And he said, "Oh," he said, "well, the peace march is across the street. He said, this will be opposing, probably these will be opposing students." I said, "Oh, Christ." So I took a fish and we went buzzing across the street. And all day long, when they would pass me on the streets, yeah, they would have, you know, communists, and get rid of the communists. They just spit on me. They blocked my little girl, she was 4, and we tried to walk by them. They blocked our way in the alley with the car, and wouldn't let me go by them. Let me take her by, so I had to get a policeman to get by, and the policeman wasn't funny, so I didn't like what we were doing either. And the police were very, they were harassing us, you know, and spying us out. And I remember to get a Coke with Patricia, and we sat down in a Walgreens store. And the group saw the phone and had a sign from behind their head, pro-communist. I didn't even know what pro meant. I didn't know the words. And that day the reporters came and they wrote us up in the paper. This little group, and Trish and I was on the front page, they wrote us up as New York pastors. I had to go ask somebody what we were doing. And they said, "This pastor is watching his children." And I seen about 3 weeks straight, like $10 a month, sent to him. I didn't really know him that well, but I just knew that you were to that kind of black that he did with his children. You know, it had to be something different. You know, it had to be something different. And, in fact, the second time I ever seen him, it was placed in Congress. And it was a big, lovely, beautiful building. And it came down the first time, the first time I ever seen him, it came down this red carpeted aisle, this beautiful building with boots on. And it's so lovely. It was a humanity by me. I kind of knelt down and it was really with him. And I said to the, and I could see people kind of talking to me and they were kind of laughing at him because he wasn't dressed as they thought he should be. And he was such a common person. And then somebody like cut the fur around their neck and she looked at him and she said, "Gee, he's kind of looking at those people." And it bothered me because I society was different. And he looked at the, and he looked at half that kind of hostility from them, you know. And he said to the minister of that church, he said, "If I'm sorry about the group, I forgot I had a mind." He said, "Maybe you could explain it to these people later." And it was kind of a humble thing. But he asked that day if anyone had any, you know, if there was anything that you could help with. And he said, "If there's anything I can do, anything I can help you," he said, "oh, you know, feel free to ask me." And I was dead. I hadn't lost my mother too long before that. I was terribly attached to him, terrible amount of guilt that people did for my mother. And my father had gotten run over by a truck shortly after, and everything was tremendous trauma and guilt. And everything out was kind of true. You know, it just did. And he said, he talked to me, he said, "I don't think I was good, I said, I was hurt my mother, I believe I killed my mother."
only things I can remember, because she always told me if she died that my father and I should know that we were just the same as me. She used her as an information. I didn't know what she told me. I don't know where she didn't know. And a young person is tending, and if you're sensitive, you take all that in. He didn't talk to me about all this. He told me that children make a mistake. I mean, children 20 years old have a new rebellious feelings. And so didn't you see that he would understand that. And he accepts this. And he said that you were too hard on yourself. And he tried to point out good qualities in people. And he seems to see a good side. Accept yourself. That was what you had to do. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with sensitivity. And I had been in an accident a few weeks before. My aunt was down at Caston. And they wasn't sure because they couldn't. I had to go to surgery to have this arm take care of the bones of crushing inside my arm. They wasn't sure what was going to happen with it. And he kind of spoke the cast and he said, "Your arm's going to be all right. Did you know that?" He said, "Your arm is going to be all right." He said, "Do you understand that?" I was crying. I said, "Well," he said, "Well, I want you to know your arm is going to be all right." And I went, I heard days of it up and he removed the cast and I never had a bit of trouble with my arm. It was on Thursday morning. But, he said, "It wasn't much I could change it, but I," he said, "I wanted you to get some money in it." And he said, "What money?" He said, "I think, can you do this?" He said, "Well," he said, "who did you send it to?" And I said, "To the teacher." And I said, "To someone." But anyway, it came down, and a lady that I used there that night was in town meeting. And she had been sending money. And he sent somebody sitting into the, and was concerned, like, "Do you know what the problem is?" And I said, "Okay, okay." But I went to a church the next week, and there was a nice woman in Leopard Angel. And he had stole all of this money that this handmaid had sent to the missionary for the children's spirit. And so all the money I said, he didn't tell me where the money came. He had taken it. And as I look back on my life and see how disturbed he was by it, I've got an instant. That was all I understood about religion, about immigration. All I really had to think about that. The key to me was coronavirus, religion and immigration. Immigration was all I knew. And my understanding was on a paper except for 24 hours under the sun, racism, and that's a thought. I wasn't even sure what I was doing, but I knew that was right.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the church?
Yes, mm-hmm. But anyway, this man, he said, he came back and he called my name. He said, "Patricia." He was on the pulpit. I was in the back of the church. He said, "Patricia." He said, "Come here with Patricia." And first of all, there was a lot of people named Patricia. We walked over to the aisle where I was sitting. Never had I seen him. One of the things I seen him, I looked at him, he had the shoes on, the tall guys were in the booth. He talked about love. He talked about a child he had adopted. He had come and taken a child. He lost his child. He was very strong and service. And he was laughing his child. And agony with himself. It was the first time I ever met you, you know, sorry. And I looked up in the front and there was this black woman who had everything that was his wife. All these 50 little cars of children. He just overwhelmed me, it really did. And at the end of the service, he came back and he called me, excuse me, that I walked directly in front of him, calling them my children. And he said, tell me something in my way, or something private, you know, something about my own physical life, about my own condition.
Okay.
And he said that I was someone who had been diagnosed with by the doctor in the uterus. And he told me that, he said that you need to go back to the doctor. He said the doctor will tell you if your pap smear is clear, is negative, you do not have cancer.
Would you mind repeating over?
And you do not have cancer, so do you understand that? And I said, I understand it. I started crying. And now people are, you know, he was very sweet. And I thought I didn't even know who he was. And I didn't even know his name. I said, "Jim's going to speak." And I said, my husband, he said, "Don't tell me a thing about that." And the only person who lived in that day was Patricia. That wasn't there.
Well, come on in here so you can get somebody to go back out and fix the tractors, over.
And my Patricia, my daughter, she looks up and we've lost a lot.
Well, by the time we get everything ready here, we'll have it ready by the time he gets in here. He may have to wait a little while, Wesley, but we'll have to get mechanics ready and everything else. He said one tractor's leaking oil and the other one has locked the steering seal.
I had been bleeding terribly, and when he
he said that, and he said you're not coming to Alice, but he demanded I wouldn't go. He said, you know, you don't
have it.
He touched my shoulder, and I felt, I was in love, and he said that, and it just stopped. And Patricia said to me, she took my hand, and she was like, four. She said, oh, Mommy, she said, the kids come back. She said, she meant the good, but she called it kids. And I was crying, and I said, oh, my husband, he said, I'm telling you a thing about your husband, he said, his name is right. And I said, he said, have you been a problem? I said, yes. And he said, again, he said, give me another shot. And I had 23 cancers, I think exhibitionism, and they said 1,500 cancer homosexuality. My theater's the only way we could go. I'm the last in show. And they told me, the detectives told me that water was headed for the Atlanta City Hospital for the criminal insane for smoking on the street, and we could never, ever, and not ever, arrest the guy from living in the city. The money you would give, the money you would give, it was just money. It was just money. This is one time in California. One of these half, and I lived down below the house and we were placed and I walked over and came back. And the woman drove up in the night and held her body on the horn. She was home as loud as she could, opened the car door and set out 11 cats. And I went, where the hell are you going to? And Jimmy and Lassie came in the house and said, where's the bitch left 11 cats here? I said, who knew that was? It was the man who started and sending the news out of some little guy. And he's only down to the bitch up. I said, give her a cat down. He said, put the cats down. Leave the cats alone. He said, I think it's an honor that your enemies know that you'll treat their animals well. He said, you keep the cat. And they'd say, you'll find your cat on the road tonight. And it'll be dead. And it'll skin it alive. And it'll be your cat. Remember that. And you found a cat on the road and it was dead. And it was continuous. You couldn't cut the bed. It was so bad in California. But I mean, it was that. You couldn't let your child walk from the house where I live to the church. People would either thumb their nose, call a cat, call, try to drag you off here. I know Jimmy goes off the road one morning. Broke his foot going off into the gutter of their car while they were down into the gutter. And it was continuously always like that. I used to drive 500 miles from Columbus. I believe Jim so much that we would go from Columbus, Ohio, to Indianapolis, Indiana, every Sunday morning for 5 years.
How far were you?
200 miles one way. We went in the morning, stayed for both services, we always. I remember coming up during the snowstorm, he'd always yell on the steps, clearly. But he never ever did that for me. He was really mean. He was bad. I felt great for him, because, to this point, I've been here so long, and I've learned, you know, he was an ugly, but great when he jumped in the middle and knocked everybody down. And that was my fear, he would knock you off and make you down. But I felt, goddamn marriage problems about your children or how to be dressed or they needed money or most of them needed money. Could he organize a group to come in and clean their house? I think he stopped service in California and put them in the place. We all only put them in the place. He worked started early and he worked on it and he was. I don't even know if he ever said thank you. I don't even know if it's hard-hearted as I was. I don't even know if I broke down and cried because family that he had helped in California. Donna, her last name, Donna Cooper, longer than it. And her son had an accident, and he helped me get the child in the hospital, and sent Marcy to look after me. He'd go to her house and take her food, and help with the bill. And the son of a bitch left, and I think she's even got some shit on the paper. And she turned against him. And I was in the service, and he broke down and cried over a picture he'd seen that day. We were at the fairgrounds in the service. And people came in from all over to see him. He was speaking. And he broke in the middle of the service. He was talking about a picture of a mother he saw on the front page of the paper that day. And a baby, she said her baby had starved to death. And the front caption was that she was hungry. And when he tried to tell us, he started crying. And he literally was sobbing on the carpet when he saw us standing there. And the next day, I went home, I worked at the entrance service at the time, and the girl called me, and she said, I was ashamed. I was ashamed of him last night. And so I was ashamed of him and my friend. And she told me, I just broke
I feel it broke me up. Marcy came to me and she said, what is it? And I was like, I didn't even tell her. I was pushing down. She was ashamed of me for crying in front of the people. Pretty sad. And he was trying to save me. And he said, well, he said, that's all right. He said, she maybe didn't understand. I thought, Marcy was talking to me. He said, tell you, he said, if it'll help you. He said, I'll call her. He said, well, if you are, just shoot me. I couldn't have anything would be ashamed of him, you know? And he called her. And so he called me back and he assured me that it was all right. And Marcy said, it's all right, honey. She said, she's not. She likes it. But when I think about it now, I realize it's kind of easy because it hurt me so bad. And the woman said, well, she didn't really mean that. And she really wasn't ashamed of him. She took the Christmas present for Christmas and the husband's job at the boy. He had his own business. Bonnie Cooper.
He's going to be up there.
Yeah, he's up there. And he had several children. Medina College, he accepted our body. He's a visitor. We did all kinds of
things. She had nothing more to do.
I know. And he's very shitting. And so did he not. She was one of them. And she said that had she known that he didn't raise, I don't know what she said. She said, had she known that you had social principles, or had she known that she had never done, and she knew all the time, because everything you did is to show her that to help people with socialism, to care for people, that there's no other way to live but in the cooperative, equitable society. She and I talked about it face to face. And the children were down. I was telling her the message before the accident. When I took my stuff over, she was so embarrassed that I gave her food and that. And I said, a true socialist is pushing the cooperative humanitarian ideas and share what you have. I didn't understand the whole philosophy of socialism or the ideology. I didn't understand what it all.
So she took all this stuff and...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Took hours of counseling. Went to Marston. She had Marston died in place. She could age in the rest of the field. Oh, yeah. She used all that. Yeah, she did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good things. We'd take care of the two of them. And you could be in patronizing. But she forgot all that. She forgot all that, along with all the others. But I would have you all the time, to yourself. People, I've seen people go up and set out in his parking lot. And he couldn't even walk across his yard. I met with counsel all the goddamn day. You know, it's that place you just wonder. It's a shame of them. Finally, one day, my husband was so disturbed that the way people had used him, he kind of set on guard out there. He told me, I couldn't believe it. There's over there. There was such an appreciation of him because he was out of jail. All of these women knew he gave me the word. He said, if he gave me the word, this would never happen again. It would never happen again. I'm going to show you something in Indiana. An archer was associate pastor of this town last man. Very, very lovely man. He was in November that they invited to come to California to speak at a church called Jews of Healing. And see, I was living at 30 years old, as you know, and I was in India, which I lived in Columbus because my husband's dad was there, and due to his own academics, we offered education. He couldn't get a job. He didn't really want it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I took my job there. And last year, Jim, both assured me, I was so insecure, I was afraid to want to left that job even when I could eat. But they always assured me that wherever I came, they would figure out a place to live. And somehow, there was some principle in me at that time. I didn't want to leave him because I thought he was being so used. And I somehow wanted to give him a customer. And I said, okay, and the crowds and things like that. The people that abused him, and he started this restaurant, he lost. People left him. A lot of people left him back in his day. And I felt that that was very painful time for him because he felt that feeding people was an important part, was a practical part of faith and religion. And people really left him over the cabbage, small cabbage. And to me, that made him more than he ever was. I couldn't see anyone could believe him at that time. He was a son says, as long as you need me, I know where I will be. And he didn't leave the person he needed. That was the time he really needed him. That was the time that a lot of the people, I remember when he was born, he was a bitch, and he was grateful to him. And he took his son the day the sin started began, especially the day of the sin. When he took his son in immigration, he began to take strong stands. He went away to the Methodist hospital, and people would, after he integrated the Methodist hospital, he went after him and himself. He integrated that hospital. I was in his house with my daughter, my husband, Dorothy,
working 30, working small, marching, middle, with every time, and all at once, a goddamn Molotov cocktail, all his children in bed, my children in bed, a firebomb, I don't know what to call it, just a thing of spark, and ended up on top of his roof. And he had all of these dogs, these two very German shepherds, these two very German shepherds, two big German shepherds, and like 700 dogs, and he had, I don't know, 14 cats, and all these goddamn animals here. And he did hear the dog cry, crying, howling. And he said, oh my God, they hit my dog. And I was forget this book, I don't know. He opened the back door, and all you could see was the moonlight was shining down with a dark night, and he had on a white shirt. And two things happened that night. We burned the service in the air, and we had a radio broadcast at 10. And on the way to the radio broadcast, I was in the car with him, and someone called the numbers with the car. They tried to hit us, and he threw his arm around the back of the seat to protect us, to throw his body over, and then the car sideswiped. He was trying to protect my team and show him myself. He threw himself to another so we would be protected. And he said, my God, that's my first thing I could tell. Well, people were going crazy. He was taking stronger and stronger sounds on the radio. And he spoke about Mahatma Gandhi. And people were waiting outside the radio room. And they were curious because he said Mahatma Gandhi would have his place in heaven. And they were furious. He was a bad guy from the middle of the people in this room. Were furious that he would take that kind of stand on Mahatma Gandhi. And they were screaming, Gandhi will go to heaven, and blah, blah, blah. And it's crazy shit. And so when we got home at night, we came at night, and that's when we talked, and we came about this Molotov cocktail, after the pasta had been in there, that Molotov cocktail, whatever it was, and up on our lips, and we heard it stab them, and we came and then we started screaming. And she opened the back door. His mother was behind him, and I was behind her, and he said, stay in the house. Both of us. He said, don't come out the door. We were out there, and I screamed, I said, don't go out there, Jim. Don't go out there. And Dorothy and Richard and I, and he walked out into the night. Picked up that dog. I looked out at him, he was in the nature. Both of his animals killed him in his arm. Back into the night, they had shot an arrow into it. It was quite something. And he was so hurt. He went back and said, and he said, don't go out there. I said, they're going to kill you. He said, I've got to get my mom. He said, I can't leave my mom. He ran out the door, and mom shot again. And I thought they'd kill him. But part of his hair was this, and he screamed at me. He said, stand back. Lean against the wall. And a bullet passed my nose, and he found it 22 rods. He said, Dorothy Roy, Richmond Star, myself, Vanilla, and Jim, all witnesses. But he carried those dogs around. Even after that, he after that, going out, he still got all these dogs. He got 30 dogs of safety in the office. But I mean, he never stopped. He's doing his dogs at this facility. And he's calling anything I want to get these phone calls, harassing. You know, I wish you'd die. One time somebody called him and he said, how does it feel, Mr. Jones, to know that 24 hours around the clock, there's a chain of bullets on that you'll die? How does that feel, Mr. Jones? He said, we should be good by your birthday. And he said, how does it make you feel? She said, we pray 24 hours a day for your death. He said, how do you feel about this? He said, I feel very badly. He said, I really do. He said, when there's so many other things that you could be sending us good thoughts for, and that you'd spend that time praying for my death. He said, can I ask you one question? She said, yes. He said, why do you hurt me so bad? She said, well, it's your black naked baby that I eat. He said, have you ever met me? She said, no. He said, would you come to my house to meet my family? Johnson killed it. And he said, I was jumping all over the room. He kept telling me to be quiet. He said, I killed it. Go kill it. Don't eat it. He said, this is cool. And he said, would you come and stab me up inside your door? He said, would you let my wife and I come to your house? She said, never. He said, would you meet me somewhere? He said, would you sit down and meet my children? And she called him, neither loving, cocksick. And she said, you're a son of a bitch. She said, he died in the blood laid in the street. He said, you tried to reason with it. And rather, both men in the circle. And he said, God damn, I mean, you know, if he was trying to understand, if she could come to his house, or whatever he could do, There's no reason, because these people hate. You hear yourself that they don't hate, they do hate. You know that, you know, everything, these people are dead. And so they do hate that much, then they did want them dead. And we think of them about praying for their death. And when I said that, there was no reason that people had come in for hours and talking. I said, it's perfect. So if you, they don't understand, you're not going to get anywhere with them. Will they hear you? You adopted the little, with that baby Jimmy. You adopted the clean baby. I mean, we faced it. I feel when I'm coming out because I couldn't leave it out. It got so I couldn't go back to the clinical home on Sunday night. Because we couldn't get out of this problem. We lived in the ghetto. We lived in it. We lived in it. The slab in the air. The only thing held the road together was my face. The rest of it was a whole side of the building out of the house. And let's take them by the hand and take them to school. And have to wait for the news. But children, I don't know why anybody got persecuted. The mentality, the hate of the racism is so goddamn great. You get a racist out here. Look at the plan you got around people's houses in Pennsylvania. 200 years ago that they used black ladies for bait for alligators, put them on hooks and doctors, so there is hate. These people gather around a house and drive up Moab. Not the saddest part of the scrub and shoot them. So they do that. And they needed them. They would have killed them if they could have gotten them. One time they had a man, you know, that was sincere. So they set up a black man on a corner. Jim was coming on the corner and the man came over and two drunks tried to stab him with the thing just cut his chest, which he still has the scar on, and went down his chest and said, to get out of here. To get out of here. He said, they paid you to do this thing, and the man said, yeah, they gave me $5. He said, start running and run. He said, don't you stop. And about 5 seconds later, a goddamn police car comes sitting up, and he said, where's the knifing? Where's the knifing going on? He said, what knifing? He said, didn't somebody register the knifing? He was breathing in. He said, I don't know. There's no knifing. I was saying. And he let the man go. America today, and people throwing the issue of dead, or the hope of children will die, or the hope of life drops to death, or that, you know. Marcia was even spit on when she took her black baby downtown. Leave her baby, do that, and come on and spit in Marcia's face. And Marcia's very, very sick. The tears rolled down. She said, I was looking, the tears just went rolling down her cheeks. And the woman took a mouthful of spit and spit in the baby's face. Well, shortly after I had met him, and he was in the jail 18 months. And he corresponded back and forth, and his letters were always so, you know, just a feeling about people, you know, how people were. And at the time he was telling me, the service thing happened in this church. And he bought that church himself, worked millions of years for that church. While he was gone, the Cecil Lindbergh took over the church, threw Archie out, and was what they call a kangaroo court, threw out black people out of Jim's church, it was Jim's church. They actually made it out of the church and made it like a little closer. And then they brought in white evangelist ministers. I remember being in here with women in the South. Who I later found both of them in the back room in a very strange position. The white pastor and Miss Russell Linder. I can't remember her damn name. But it seems to me I didn't get any more money because I didn't know at the time that he had got the truth. I thought that, you know, like most churches are given to their teachers. I just thought he said that he was a safety pastor who was treated so badly. Archie was treated horribly during this time. I felt bad, and then I started getting a lot of this stuff. But, and people were hurt. People were afraid. People left. They didn't have to ask him to do it. People left. They got afraid. And basically, what I didn't have that, I had a little moment when I didn't know if he was going to get out of the hospital or not, and I can't tell you why I wasn't saving that next step. And there's a point I had a man up here, oh yeah, and I'm going to be shot. The church that I was attending at the time, I was attending a church, and Tommy said, hi, we're doing this present. And when he came here to speak, I went out and I went out and gathered people to come. I made little handbills out with writing with myself. And my husband and I got on straight and handed out to people going to communities and invite people out. And when I went to this
when they handed out this food and that this literature on the bomb, and showed the faces of these Christ children, I would go into churches and teachers in their pants, but I was telling their menus. You know, the little pamphlet on Sunday morning. And the minister of the church called me into a special meeting, a special meeting over. Called me into his office. And he acted like he was such a fan of Jim. And Jim was very, you know, they needed him. They liked the prestige of Jim Gunn. But when they called me into the office, they cut me to shreds. But I was working in the church as a janitor. And they constantly, because they said, we had to start wearing uniforms and make it be the janitor. And they said that Jim Gunn was just, he said, Jim Gunn died. He said, but he's an extremist. He said, well, he drive 25 miles to eat breakfast. He said, he won't even take a drink of water where a black man can't drink. He said, he's an extremist. He said, he's ridiculous. He said, he's just a ridiculous person. Well, I would embrace him because I loved him. And I knew that this man, immediately in his life, was dying for what they believed. He said, you're running around with him. He said, do you know how he is about the black, the colored folks? The minister said to me. He said, I'll tell you what's going to happen to you, Patty. He said, your daughter's going to end up marrying a black person. He said, and that they're going to end up hating you. And he turned to me, excuse me, he said, you better get out of this stuff while you can. This man who's intelligent, counseling, so-called pastor, none of me, he said, there's no need to be driving 200 miles every Sunday. He said, you can come here to church. The people here are talking about you. He said, the meetings, they're talking about you. And trapping down to you. This is called Church of the Savior. Arthur Witherspoon. And Jim was around. He was a counselor. And I knew him first before I met Jim. But he told me the immigration was right. He talked about it. But he never gave me one time I had a little Volkswagen. I brought 9 black children to his church with my own child. And I did stuff like that. I was down the street and got the children out. Because he said, you know, go through the ghettos and look for poor and see them and do this thing. So instead of being there, I thought I would take him to Livingston Church. And I had a whole goddamn four-hour meeting. He called me into a special meeting over. In fact, I had all these little black babies there out in front of this big church on High Street. Broad Street.
But he didn't want it.
He said, the black people, he said, the Negroes have their church. He said, what you're doing, he said, you think you're helping others. He said, you're doing nothing but harming. He said, your children are going to hate you, that's what you've done. He said, Jim Gunn, I said, you know what his wife said, that Mrs. Witherspoon, Vita. And she said, you don't have to defend Jim Gunn. She said, I understand. I said, well, obviously, you have to defend him. You're putting him down. You don't try and make him face me to it. And I was very out front with everything, you know. And I said, if you think he's too much for the black people, why didn't you tell him that? And he said, well, he's an extremist. And he said to me that day, I was a race to, and I swear on my God, when he came to his church and spoke. And then he said to me, he said, his only fault is, he said in a public meeting, he said, his only fault is that his heart is too big. He has a heart as big as the outdoors behind his back. To me, he said, he's a goddamn extremist. And he said, any man that would drive 25 miles before he would take a drink of water in a restaurant for a black person. In other words, evidently, Jim had been with him, and he wouldn't drink water because they wouldn't provide him. He refused. He went 25 miles to drink water. To Witherspoon, that was extremism. To me, that was Christ's character. And Witherspoon couldn't understand why I honored that. I was going to be sitting in front of other people. The Jim Jones is a goddamn extremist. I said, what is the peace in the world that you have some peace in your own home staring at me? Because I was a little nervous, fidgety person, you know, and running here and about. She knows she's still going to be a little half-life. And Jim said, yes, it's nice to have peace in your own home. I said, but you must never let that stop you from doing the right thing. And they found out that I agitated people by making them leave the other chair. And he said, but an agitator always gets the dirt out of anything. And you know that.
What's there? And, received him after he talked, you know, as a very enlightened person, but he had a talk with Divine Himself, and Divine Himself, we think it likes him. I think he's from my mimic station. They told him his little teacher.
Yeah, a little brother?
Yeah, a little brother.
Yeah.
But Jim told him a lot about his own life. That's why he was so impressed with Jim. And the people took to Jim real well too. But they had such a dependency on him. He never dealt with the real social issues, you know. From what I understand about the beginning of that movement, though, was more socialistic than it was as a latter part, because he began to believe the stuff that they were saying about him, and he gloried in the fact. And what he was doing at the beginning was getting people off the welfare rolls, that's what I think attracted Jim Jones to even see what was going on there. In Cincinnati one time, and this phenomenal thing that this gift that Jim has started working, and he called me over, and he fell about that. And so Timothy went back to an office. I want you to go to Philadelphia and tell these people that, you know, the date and time of Father Divine will die. And for them not to despair, they've always got a home. So I went to Philadelphia, and that's when I encountered Peter, the one that you know,
yeah.
That was up at the valley. But he was in charge of all of the stores and the grocery stores and money-making projects for the Peace Mission. And he took me out in the room because I met him previously. And they were having a big meeting the next night. But anyhow, Peter said, we must go over there. And there was about 25,000, maybe 3,000 people there. And he introduced me and asked me to have a few words. And I got up and kind of laid this on him. That there was somebody that cared about them, and that for them not to be in despair that Father Divine would die. I forget the date that it was right now. But anyhow, he died on that date. And he died of, I remember he died of sugar diabetes.
And this was several years before.
Yes, this was prior to this. But the whole message was that he alarmed them that he was going to die, but that they had a place to come to, that there was somebody that was concerned, and that's Jim Jones. Whole life has been that way, that he saw a bunch of people that had put all their hopes and aspirations on an individual and what he predicted. He said that people would be committing suicide and going out of their mind and becoming very ill because of this, and that happened because the whole emotional side was tied up in this, and when this happened, they couldn't face reality. And so, you know, the latter part, that's when we went back on several occasions, we always brought people back to, and even to the place that this young wife of Divine, she became very interested in Jim, and would have just another example of him not being sidetracked from what his goal was, and that is worldwide socialism. Yeah, I mean, he could have moved in on that I Am Confident and been leader of that Divinist movement, which it had went downhill a little bit from what it was in his heyday, and even after his death, of the way that she was running things. But I mean, he could have went there and with his personality, and I mean, he could have looked at it and do a real going thing. And there's quite a bit of property, you know. So, I mean, if he would have been a huckster, a con man, it was the ideal situation for that sort of thing, but it wasn't. Hey, it's never been sidetracked from his goal
Yeah, I understand that, but what I understand is what was the actual
pathway? And so he could have had the whole Divinist movement. I know that. They could have... Yeah, but he could have had that, Dick. All he had to do is got her compromised, and I said, if he had been a con person, if he'd have been that type of person, instead of trying to teach every turn of the road that I found him to demonstrate principle, not only demonstrate, but to teach people this is the way you're supposed to.